And welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this evening is my co-host,
T-Bob A-Bear. What is up, Brino? I'm really happy to be back. For those who may not know, I had a baby almost 3 months ago now, coming up on 11 weeks. I know I'm the obnoxious parent that counts in weeks, but unfortunately, that's why I haven't been able to come on as much lately, but I am very happy to be back. And I am very excited to not just talk movies, but to get to talk about this Avengers movie, which I have been fastidiously, is that the correct word? I don't know, whatever. I've been trying my best to not talk about it in a public forum so that everybody has time to go see it. So I'm excited to really get to hash it up.
Yeah, that's something that the Russo brothers themselves have kind of said, is that like one of the reasons we're holding off on the title for Avengers 4 is basically we want people to watch this film and digest it and discuss it and meditate on it, and then we'll figure, you know, we'll rock your world with an Avengers 4 title.
I like it. I mean, I didn't know much about the Russo brothers coming into this movie. I guess I still don't actually know much about them beyond. I think they did a really good job with this movie. I mean, you want to talk about a tough task? Juggling all the different elements that they had to juggle, bringing it together into a cohesive movie that's fun, entertaining, emotional. I mean, it's just a hell of an accomplishment by them, especially because, like, so what is their resume, the Russo brothers?
So the Russo brothers, oddly enough, got their start on a small television show called Arrested Development.
Wow.
And Community as well. So they have a background in television comedy for the most part. They did one small micro-budget movie that they've financed on credit cards, and that played at a festival called Slam Dance, and Steven Soderbergh saw it, and Soderbergh gave them a little bit more money to, you know, actually do it properly, and then they did, you know, Arrested Development and Community, and then they got this particular job.
What?
On Winter Soldier.
Okay, so they did Winter Soldier.
They did Winter Soldier, and
okay,
then and
which
the,
is,
and then they did Civil War,
a top five Marvel movie to me, if not top three. Okay, I never actually finished Civil War. It's one of my dark confessions. But what I saw, I really enjoyed. I don't know why I still haven't finished it,
because it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah, which Avengers was too,
yeah.
But it didn't feel like that. Felt super fast paced with everything that was happening. Okay, so they did have then. Marvel knew to trust them with their baby Avengers. Like that makes a little more sense. It's still a hell of a jump to go from a smaller movie and TV comedy then to the second Captain America movie. And they knocked that out the park. So very talented guys, the Russo brothers. And like I said, all the pressure in the world on them, they pulled it off.
By the time they're going to be finished with Avengers 4, they will have been working for Marvel for 7 straight years.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a great gig, though, right? Because Ryan Johnson, one of my favorite filmmakers, you know how much I love Last Jedi. If you listen to this podcast, you know how much I love Last Jedi. A lot of people were disappointed to hear that he had signed on for 3 more Star Wars movies because, someone that creative, you kind of want to see him stretch their wings, right? Well, while I agree with you, I can understand that side of the argument. After watching the Last Jedi making of, like a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, is about 3 hours worth, I think.
One of the best documentaries, behind the scenes documentaries ever.
It's very good, but it's still nobody touches what Peter Jackson in the Lord of the Rings movies and the Hobbit movies, which I've actually been working through the Hobbit appendices that I never watched. We're talking like 7 hours of content on every single movie, but I digress. But what I was kind of struck by in watching Rian Johnson operating that, and that this is a director that is fully loving the ability for, while he maybe can't be creative in that he has to be in Star Wars, although he gets to take whatever direction he wants, anything that he thinks up, he can make a reality, right? Price, money is no issue. Like anything that he wants, anything that he needs, he talks about how streamlined it's become with Disney through making these Marvel movies and all the other Star Wars movies. As a director, there has to be something incredibly, I think, exciting about that, and almost unparalleled when you look at working with other studios, because Disney implicitly trusts Rian Johnson. They're going to let him do whatever he wants, and so basically he gets to put his, like, grandest ambitions, however wild he can imagine, or, you know, we're going to build this massive set, like, he can make it happen. So I think that's got to be very appealing to him, and somebody like the Russo brothers, yes, they worked for Marvel for 7 years, but at this point, anything they want to do, they can make happen, especially after the success of this Infinity War movie.
Well, they've opened up their own studio. Not a production company, a studio. They took their money and they started a small studio, and they've hired
to like produce movies?
Right. And they've done Marcus and McFeely, who were the writers of the previous two Captain America movies and Infinity War. They've hired them off as story consultants. So what they're basically going to do is create a small incubator for young up and coming independent talent to nurture it and grow it and produce new content.
Wow, that's awesome, man. That's like incredibly community minded.
And they said that their next project will be for their studio. So they're not going to jump from this directly into another big major tentpole. They're going to do another movie, but they're going to produce it through their own studio.
Well, and yeah, I mean, by the time all this finishes up, it would have been like almost 10 years that they've been working for Marvel Street. So after a decade, I would say a break is probably well deserved.
Yes, and to your point about Ryan, the thing that interests me the most right now is how the fan base is gonna react when Johnson, because I think the generalized opinion is that the hope is that Johnson trilogy is Knights of the Old Republic.
I shouldn't say why. I never played KOTOR. I know how great that story is. From what I've read and heard, but I want Rian Johnson to do whatever Rian Johnson wants to do in the Star Wars universe.
And the problem for me is if they end up doing Knights of the Old Republic, all these fanboys who melted their faces off over his choices on Last Jedi are going to melt their face off again, because it will be Rian Johnson's interpretation of Knights of the Old Republic. It will not be the beat-for-beat Knights of the Old Republic that they remember from the expanded universe. And I think that...
And we're talking about the video game here, right?
In the
KOTOR
books.
1 and 2.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know there were books. Okay.
In the books. Knights of the Old Republic takes place 3,000 or 5,000 years before the events of the Skywalker saga. So, like, you far remove yourself from all of that, and you get into a place where you're talking about, you know...
See, that's also something that I don't find terribly interesting. It's going to be... If that's the case, it's going to be chock full of Jedi...
Chock full of Sith.
I guess that could be relatively cool. Or, no, I mean, whatever. You could make that cool. Maybe just in my own selfish opinion, which sounds more interesting.
Him taking those kids from the end of the movie and just saying that, look, there are other people out here in the world, this galaxy, that are Force-sensitive, have absolutely nothing to do with the Skywalkers, and we can go visit new planets and tell new stories with people who have Force powers but aren't, you know, Rey and Finn and Kylo.
The thing is, it is a galactic story, meaning there's a galaxy worth of stories to tell. I wouldn't mind that setting in a new age Star Wars setting with the new trilogy. I still think there's so much unexplored space after the prequels before New Hope. Like in that what is that? Is it 30 years there? The Empire taking over?
3 and 4 is it like, I think, 20 years, 18 to 20 years. Because Luke's a fairly young person when he is found on Tatooine by Obi-Wan at the beginning of New Hope.
Well, you could just do so much with what it's like in certain parts of the galaxy, being at mining colonies, et cetera, but I guess now that I think about it out loud, maybe that is even a bit restrictive. Maybe you do just go New Age, burn it all down, like Kylo says, and see what Rian Johnson can create. Whatever he's created, I'm on board, because Last Jedi, I think, is the best made Star Wars movie in terms of story, quality, action, even if it's maybe my second favorite to A New Hope.
It's not better than Empire to me. I think the fundamental problem that a lot of those fanboys have is Luke. They had this vision of Luke that had been built up in their minds from the expanded universe. And I think they had this idea that their old hero, played by Mark Hamill, was going to ignite his green lightsaber, and he was going to go out, and even if he had to die, he was going to go out there in a blaze of glory, and he was going to kick some ass, and he was going to take some names, and he was going to be badass Luke Skywalker.
And
at the end of the day, he stays on Octu. He force projects himself in a matter of great, you know, he goes on what amounts to a a Force trip because of, you know, he hadn't used the Force in years.
Yeah.
So the amount of energy and force it took for him to project himself like that across the universe literally was enough to kill him. But he never leaves the rock. His lightsaber never connects with Kylo's. And while he does yield himself in the same way that Obi-Wan does yield himself, he never makes that sacrifice.
So,
and I think that's the problem for generic guy in his 40s who has waited to see Luke Skywalker come back.
So my problem with that is twofold. First, a lot like, okay, if you believe that Luke should have been more action-based, that he should have been out there fighting and, you know, like you said, kicking ass and taking names.
Or as Mantis would say, taking names and kicking ass.
Yes, but did you miss the entire point of the original trilogy in which selfish action and kind of bullheadedness and being reactive is shunned in favor of pacifism and trusting in, like, the goodness of people over your own internal action? Like, that is literally the takeaway from Empire, is that he screws everything up because he goes and tries to take things into his own hand and rescue his friends. And literally, in Jedi, he succeeds because he goes passive, because he refuses to fight the Empire, or the Emperor. He refuses to fight Darth Vader. So that is, like, the core moral lesson of the entire original trilogy, and then people just seem to have kind of let their fantasies run away and say, no, it's all about Luke just out there kicking ass with a lightsaber in a way. It's almost like the prequels infecting some of the original trilogy messaging. Second part, if you show up on that island on Octu and Luke is just at the drop of a hat ready to go fight, well, then what the hell's he been doing all these years? If he's ready to just go fight, then he is truly a coward. Because what, he's just been hiding out while everybody else dies around him? No, the only way that works is if he is truly a broken man that believes that his best path, that the best thing that he can do is to kind of let the Jedi die and let the universe move on. And why wouldn't he think that? He knows about how the Jedi ruled the galaxy, took orders from a Sith Lord, and they helped to propagate a galactic struggle that turned a republic into an empire that let the Sith rule the galaxy. At the height of their powers, the Jedi screwed it all up. And then Luke, too, fell victim of hubris with Kylo Ren and the creation of the Knights of Ren and his other students being killed. So I so passionately agree and am impressed with where Rian Johnson took this character that I cannot stand their sort of criticism. Or, I mean, I guess I can stand them. I just refute them. And the final part is that what's more effective in terms of legends, in terms of people and stories that stand the test of time? Is it a badass fighter who maybe gets a few kills to his name before he gets struck down, or is it a martyr? Is it somebody who stands for something bigger? And how that all worked out at the end. He literally did the trick where he faces down the entire First Order with just his laser sword. Like, they found a way to make that line come true and it'd still be effective. He becomes a martyr and he becomes a legend and he allows the resistance to stay alive. So, like, I think it is an incredibly fitting end to the story of Luke Skywalker, masterfully handled. And if you don't agree with it, I think you have to do some real examination of what are the lessons that you have learned through watching Luke in 4, 5, and 6. Rant over. I apologize. I could talk about that all day. We should probably get off of Star Wars. Every time I come on here, I go on a Star Wars sidetrack.
Well, amen, brother. That was a very eloquent and very passionate defense, and I agree with it. The rebuttal that I will offer is that those average 45-year-olds or 40-year-olds grew up with the expanded universe in which there was a reality in which that's what Luke did. He founded the new temple. He found a new temple, he trained new Jedi, and he went off on adventures, and he took a wife, and he did all of this stuff.
So I do get the feeling, though, that he kind of did that up until Kylo's betrayal, right? I mean, would you agree with that?
I think that he did that until, for whatever reason, he sensed, when he started to sense the impending turn.
Yeah.
He knew how that story would end because he saw it with his own father, and he felt like a failure for doing what he for not having been able to to sense it well before Snoke had turned him.
Yeah.
And so he contemplates killing his grandson, or killing his nephew, but he can't do it. But the action in and of itself finishes what Snoke ultimately wanted, which was to turn Kylo.
Yes, absolutely.
And he set up the temple. He went, we know through what things that are canon, that he went off and he got pieces of the Elder Tree, and he started a new temple. We saw the temple burn. We know that there were other students. He killed almost all of them, took some of them, which we presume those he took are the Knights of Ren.
JJ's definitely going to bring back his Knights of Ren idea this movie, I would imagine.
But like, he did that in a space in which the First Order were just now, by the time that timeline ends, the First Order are just now starting to emerge.
But there was still a lot of Empire to mop up, like previous to that, right? Like he would have been
the same as Hydra and Captain in at the beginning of Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Lord knows I've seen those movies enough. I mean, they're going through trying to find Loki's scepter because it was in the hands of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they didn't know that S.H.I.E.L.D. was Hydra. So they're trying to go around the world cleaning up different Hydra bases, trying to find this scepter. And it's the idea is that once we find the scepter, we'll have destroyed Hydra, and we can all go home and rest, and we don't have to be superheroes anymore. I felt like it was the same kind of thing with the Empire. You know, the Battle of Jakku ended the Galactic Civil War. They found a peace. Slowly but surely, there were some rebellious, you know, parts that had to be controlled, but ultimately peace came to the galaxy, and that what happened was essentially Plan B. Hux's daddy and had orders from the Emperor that there had been these resources that had been stored away. A lot of the, you know, Empire sympathizers had gotten together, and they started collecting children just the way that, you know, you would have just to start any kind of movement like that, child warriors.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, the First Order starts. And my thought was that First Order was starting to emerge as a legitimate threat to the universe about the time that Kylo Ren turned on Luke Skywalker.
That makes sense.
And so, therefore, there wasn't a giant intergalactic threat for Luke to face. There wasn't a place for him to go out hunting or something for him to go out and hunt. He wasn't supposed to go out there and fight a battle because there was no battle to fight. The battles that were being fought in the Senate or in the intergalactic governing body about the way forward.
So is that canon? Like, there's no Empire remnants that Luke goes and mops up when he's still, like, after Jedi?
Not new canon. Not new canon.
Yeah, I'm talking about new canon.
Yeah, Disney's new canon is very small and doesn't contain it. The only stories about Luke are stories in which he either mops up stories where he either goes and gets the parts that he needs to restart the Jedi Temple, or there are things that he adventures that take place in the immediacy after the end of the Return of the Jedi. There's nothing like, you know, covering a good 20 years of that, or 20, 25 years of that 30-year span. I'd say only about 5 years of that span is actually covered in Disney's new canon.
So if they wanted to, they could still make it more action-y pre-Kylo turn. But greater point being, I think we agree in the direction he went after Kylo. But that's a very good point that you make as far as...
Those fanboys had that in their minds.
Yeah, I mean, because I have no connection with the old EU stuff. So I can't really judge people who love, what is it, like the Zahn, the Timothy Zahn right. trilogy and everything. So that I could understand, you've given me a new perspective as to how that could be disappointed for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've hit our allotted Star Wars talk time. I apologize.
Well, actually, no, we haven't.
Nice.
Because we're gonna move from Last Jedi and reactions and thoughts about Luke Skywalker, which was totally not where I was prepared to go with this podcast.
I know. I'm sorry. I derailed.
But it does go into our conversation about a movie that's coming out in 3 weeks. That deals with a young Han Solo, which is tracking at somewhere around $175 million opening weekend.
What are they saying about, because I mean, I heard how incredible Deadpool 2's testing scores are. Is there any information like that out there?
No, because the film starts screening for people this week in France.
Oh, God. And can?
I can.
Is that a sign of confidence that they're sending it to Cannes?
Revenge of the Sith played at Cannes, so. Take that for what it's worth.
I mean, Revenge of the Sith was the bounce back, or generally viewed, I guess, as the bounce back of the...
I had the high ground.
...of the original trilogy. By the way, this is a public service. Everybody should go on the prequel memes subreddit. It is an unending pot of hilarity. And Anakin, yes, high ground memes are constant and plentiful.
Anakin, you're breaking my heart.
Is that... Okay.
We have no scientific data, but she is dying of a broken heart.
Don't bring up Padme and Anakin's relationship. It's the weakest part.
I don't think she liked me watching her.
It's the weakest and the weirdest part of the original trilogy. There's a lot of good there, okay? The prequel trilogy, yeah. I mean. Yeah. What were we talking about?
So Han Solo going to debut.
Revenge of the Sith played a
This movie has there. Had so many production troubles. I mean, we fired two directors, had to hire a new guy. There's debates among how much of the script is left. You know, yet anonymous, you know, set guy going out there saying that, you know, well, it was the same script. You know, they shot the same movie from the same script from, you know, Cassidy and his son, but they just shot it in a different way, and they were more precise with it. Whereas Lord and Miller were incompetent, and they couldn't make up their minds, and they were encouraging too much improv and these kinds of things. But it's really the same script, and it's the same story, and it's 100% of the same material, but just shot in a different way. So
it sounds like Spin Zone.
Totally Spin Zone. But, like, so it's tracking ahead of Rogue One, and the trailers look okay. I think the trailers actually look pretty solid. I think everybody's favorite part of this is going to be Lando. But what are your thoughts on the movie tracking to open at $175 million? And that's, studio estimates are always conservative.
I mean, I don't look. I mean, big numbers for Star Wars or Marvel movies mean almost nothing to me. Like, they're all going to get big numbers. Like, who's not going to go see Solo? If it doesn't review well, that'll dent it, but it's still going to kill it. Like, it could review terribly, and it will still kill it opening weekend. I am just more concerned about the quality of the movie. The rumors of needing an acting coach. And I got to say, the weird part is I do feel like I've been a bit poisoned, though, by all these production troubles, because the first time I watched the trailer, what's the actor's name? Alden Emmerich. Emmerich. I was like, oh my God, this guy's terrible. And then on subsequent viewings, I'm like, oh wait, no, actually, I think I kind of like him. So I'm trying to erase my mind of any prejudgments or biases, and I'm excited to see if it's any good. But I'm just terribly concerned, because obviously messing up Solo would be a hell of a misstep. If this is the first new Star Wars movie that doesn't really hit with audiences. Look, but Rogue One had a lot of troubles, and look how it ended up. What do you think about Ron Howard at the helm? Do you trust Ron Howard to make something out of this mess?
I trust Ron Howard to deliver whatever the studio wanted him to deliver. Mm. I've seen this man make 3 Da Vinci Code movies.
Oof.
He will do whatever. He will do whatever your people want. He will do, and he will do it in an organized fashion. And he'll do it with a smile on his face.
I watched his Twitter QA where he's answering questions, and it was just so
Opie. Yes,
yes,
and that guy is married to an extremely
mechanical.
Hot. And that guy's married to an extremely hot woman.
Well, look, he's a hell of an artist. He's still a hell of a filmmaker. But
Rush
as you said,
was the last really good movie I saw from him.
As you said, he is also a kind of studio's best friend in terms of dependability. And I always get worried about the studio infringing upon directors' visions, which is why I was worried about Rogue One, which I guess we'll see if it comes into play in Hollow and in Solo. And I personally don't love Rogue One. I think it's good. I don't think it's
I
great.
Love Rogue One. I think it's awesome. I don't know how much of it is Gareth, and I don't know how much of it is Guillory, and I don't know how much of it is Kathleen Kennedy. All I know is I like the movie, and Admiral Ackbar gets a better representation in Rogue One than he does in Last Jedi.
Well, you raised maybe my biggest criticism of Last Jedi. Ackbar should have gone out better. Also, I mean, maybe why didn't they make Admiral Holdo Admiral Ackbar?
Because Holdo and Leia have a history of growing up as children together on Alderaan.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I just feel like he could have been. Sorry. Jeez, I almost fell into another Star Wars pitfall there.
But here's the thing. Who is this movie for? D- do you need a Han Solo origin story? Because I don't need a Han Solo origin story. I can go to my local library and pick up the book that tells me what the old EU says his origin was, which will pretty much be the same thing here. But I don't need to know how old Chewie is. I don't need to know how Han and Chewie met. I don't need to know how Lando and Han gambled for the Millennium Falcon. I don't need to know what the Millennium Falcon looked like when Lando had his closet on it.
That is so funny that you just said that, because literally my first thing I was going to say was, but did you see that clean Millennium Falcon? Did you see how clean it looked inside? It's funny. Like, everything that you said you don't even know, I actually am into. I am into getting those answers. I think I want to see. I have a special, and this carries over in the X-Wing miniatures game, everything. I have a special love for the Falcon, for Lando and Han's story about how the Falcon, and Lando and Han and Chewie riding around in the Falcon now, Rey and Chewie. Maybe it's because I feel like I've flown it, because I've played it in so many tournaments with the X-Wing miniatures game. But like, it's almost, I kind of am excited to get a lot of these answers. But once again, I have not read the original EU stuff, so
I'm fearful of moving into Boba Fett territory, where like, you give me a backstory I didn't need, and it like, it's not executed very well. But we will see.
Boba Fett doesn't need a backstory, in my opinion. He's already got that in Rebels. What he needs is just a movie where he's competent. Because he has not actually had a movie where he's been competent yet.
But you changed the whole mystique about him. He's just a mysterious bounty hunter who Vader knows and Vader kind of has respect for in Empire. Now, that all gets wiped away to an extent in Jedi, where he just, you know, haphazardly gets thrown into a Sarlacc pit. But the mystique of Boba Fett is gone when you find out that he was nothing more than a specialized clone, not too different from the Stormtroopers, who had his dad had his head cut off by a Jedi.
Yeah.
That's it.
But the original
sin, and he was
a weepy
little kid holding his daddy's head. And
but the original sin, though, like you said, was what happened in Jedi. So after that tarnishing of his character, then I'm much less offended by his backstory. They also do a pretty good job of making him seem like a prodigy. I said Rebels earlier. I meant Clone Wars. In the Clone Wars cartoon, you actually do run into little kid Boba Fett, and he's already kicking ass at like 11 years old, which you raise a good point. The mystique is gone, unfortunately. But
and that's what I'm going to be interested to see. A lot of people love Han Solo. How do they react to having his story told, and is it done correctly?
Yeah,
and
no, I mean, look, you're not wrong, man, because it could blow up in their faces.
Especially now that Harrison Ford is dead, and any sequels we get to this are the only incarnation of Han Solo we're ever going to have.
And that's fine. I mean, I think that's fine. Like, Harrison Ford's, once again, I don't need more Harrison Ford Han. He had the perfect ending. Like, I think Mark Hamill, Luke had the perfect ending, though. I think Mark Hamill's going to be in the next one, right?
Yeah, Force Ghost.
Yeah.
So let's move on from Star Wars.
Yes.
Let's talk for a moment about Deadpool.
Oh, I'm excited.
So Ryan Reynolds gave an interview, as he does, and he makes jokes about, you know, Disney, you know, he having tea with Mickey Mouse here soon because, you know, of the Disney deal, although that's being complicated now by Comcast. He said that there is not going to be a Deadpool 3, that they're going full-fledged into X-Force.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about using Deadpool 2 as basically an X-Force prequel? Because the entire X-Force team is in Deadpool 2. We've seen this from the trailers. What do you think of the idea of not having a true Deadpool sequel, but really just doing a X-Force prequel?
I mean, I think it looks hilarious. I trust Ryan Reynolds at this point. I did not see the original vision for Deadpool. I did not know how you can make that movie entertaining. And then it suddenly becomes one of the most entertaining superhero movies ever made. I mean, the Marvel movies that I like better than Deadpool is maybe like 3. Like, I'd have to really sit down and hash it out. But like, it's incredible. So I trust his vision. I think it looks really funny from the previews. It's obviously tested out of control, like you said. I can't wait to see it. And you know what? I don't give a damn about X-Force. Same way I didn't care about Deadpool going into this, so I'll probably be an X-Force fan after this movie. I still would love if he could somehow show up in the actual Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Again, tell your fine folks at Comcast to keep their hands off the Disney deal, let the Disney deal go through. I don't think Disney will have any issues releasing R-rated content.
No, they've said that. Haven't they said that? I thought I read that they said that. I could be wrong.
I think the concern there is, the thing that should alleviate anybody's fears is that they owned Miramax at one point, and Miramax was putting out Shakespeare in Love. And Shakespeare in Love is not a Disney film.
And they bought Fox, so couldn't they keep the Fox name on it and not put like Disney up front, but still make it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm interested.
I mean, Reynolds is out there like talking about Thanos' stones in the trailer and stuff, so he's already flirting with it.
Yeah, there was a Disney joke that they made him cut.
Really?
That much we do know. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's funny. I just like, you know, I think I would rather do a Deadpool 3 than an X-Force movie, but I feel like I trust Drew Goddard to hit a X-Force movie out of the park. So if the sooner I can see a new Drew Goddard movie, the better. I'm fine with, you know,
also
an X-Force movie.
Like, it's still going to be a Deadpool movie, though. Like, even if it's
X-Force, the leader of the team.
It's still going to be about him.
Right. Basically. And, like, this movie is about him and a kid.
T.J. Miller will not be back, though.
No, that's why you're not a douche and sexually harass porn stars and regular people.
He's
and then
a crazy person.
Call in bomb threats on trains because your ex-girlfriend's on the train.
Talk about someone who blew a good gig. And I've heard everybody talk about his stand-up's not even that good. Like, he let Silicon Valley blow up in his face. He's now let Deadpool blow up in his face. Like, T.J. Miller, just you're being a little self-destructive. You can make so much money just having other people write material for you.
He's going through a midlife crisis, and it's one that I think is certainly a situation where he's crying out for help, and hopefully he gets that help.
I think that's very kind of you.
All right, so let's move on. So, T-Bob,
mm-hmm.
We have discussed on this podcast that there is a Fast and the Furious franchise that abounds.
Yeah, so you have educated me as to the behind-the-scenes drama between all the alpha males involved in this franchise.
Yes, because I saw Rampage.
Oh, my God. What the fuck? What is wrong with you, Brian?
I saw Rampage.
You went to the... what?
I paid money at 10:30 at night after I got...
10:30 at night?
After I got off of work.
It's an even more unreasonable time.
And I saw an IMAX version of Rampage.
Oh, my God. How was it? I must know. That noise, I think, is the perfect review. I don't even know if you need to expound.
It's The Rock being charming and hilarious.
He has a lot of charisma. Like, he can carry, he carried Jumanji. Well, really, Jack Black as a teen girl carried Jumanji, but The Rock's kind of the glue in that movie. But Rampage just seemed a step too far. The IP's weird. Like, we don't need to talk about Rampage.
So, The Rock's on the press tour for Rampage, and he starts talking about the stuff about him and Diesel. And he talks about how, that's not getting fixed anytime soon because Vin had to come into my trailer and we didn't exactly see eye to eye. And, you know, I have no ill will feelings. So, maybe I actually do have some ill will toward that guy. And, you know, Statham is getting ready to do the PR for a Shark movie, Meg. The Meg, which is going to be awesome, and he's starting.
Shark movies terrify me.
And he's starting to talk about the potential plans for what the next movie is, which is Hobbs and.
That's the Rock Statham spinoff,
right? And that sounds fun and interesting, but Big Daddy Vin can't let himself go. Big Daddy, he can't let everything go.
But Vin's going to make a ton of money off that.
So
movie,
in the middle of the PR for that and him getting all that information out about his spinoff movie, Vin Diesel was like, "Guess where we're filming? Part of Fast and the Furious 9 will be set on the continent of Africa. The Fast and the Furious family's going to Africa."
Nice.
Your thoughts?
I have no thoughts. I actually have not. One day I'm going to commit to watching them. I have not watched past Tokyo Drift, which I kind of, oddly enough, enjoyed. I think the second Fast and Furious X is probably the least favorite of the ones that I've seen. So I missed the really just surge of optimism that they got in kind of 4 and 5, I would say. Was 5 the high mark or 6?
4, 5, and 6 is a great trilogy.
Yeah, people seem to really love those. I think they were a little more turned off by 7.
7's choppy because you have the death of Paul Walker, and that's why it's memorialized for that, I'll see you again ending and all of that. But in actuality, it's a film that's highly compromised because schedules were all over the place. I still say the people who should have been paid the most in Hollywood history should have been those writers who were summoned to a room at Christmas time and told, you're eating Chinese food or takeout for the next month. You're going to sit in this room and we're going to figure out how we're going to make this film work. And they did. And the only way they could make it work was because Vin Diesel was the only one who had any time. So Fast and the Furious 7, they used the digital Walker twins. And it's the Vin Diesel show.
Yeah.
And Rock shows up at the beginning and Rock shows up at the end. But for the most part, it's the Vin Diesel show.
But, I mean, it's a little more understandable, actually, when you provide some context to which, like, Star Wars is going to have to deal with a little bit of that in 9.
But
with Leia.
If they're going to Africa, I don't want them going to Egypt because Egypt is too similar to Dubai, which is where they've already been. So if you're going to go to Africa,
like Johannesburg or something?
Johannesburg. I would actually just keep them out of South Africa, too. I'd like to see them go to Uganda or somewhere.
That's true. That's true. Get more creative with it.
Right.
Johannesburg is like the Africa cop-out when you want to go to Africa but don't really want to go to Africa.
When you want to talk about, blood diamond trades or things like that, which is something that I could very easily see the Fast and the Furious movies.
I love the movie Blood Diamond.
It is. Leo was really good in that.
Abreu. What did I say?
But, I mean, your thoughts on the possibility of them filming on 9?
Nine. Like I said, I don't know if I'm the best to speak on it because I just don't.
Well, where are the places on the earth that you would like to see them hopscotch?
Because I've seen them roll through favelas, right, in South America.
So they've done South America, they've done Cuba, they've done the United States.
Cuba's probably pretty cool because they have a crazy car culture over there anyway.
They've done Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
But they haven't done a lot of Europe. They did the UK. It's pretty much there. Australia, you could do.
Australia's going to be like, what is it going to be?
Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, do post-apocalyptic Fast and Furious. Like, create a storyline where you basically cause an apocalypse, and then everybody's just trying to make it in the deserts of Australia. No, I mean, look, I don't know. They could go anywhere, I guess. Africa seems like the right, why not?
Yes, indeed. So let's move on.
They need to move to the ocean, Fast and the Furious, but with boats. Have it like the final scene from Face Off.
No, they need to somehow get Vin Diesel into space and have him on the moon.
Is actually the correct call. Yeah. Good call.
Yeah, space is actually the correct call there. So you liked Bright?
No. Somebody's giving you bad information. I could not finish Bright. I like the setup of Bright. Of what happens if you bring these Tolkien-esque fantasy races and settings into the modern day, I think that how they did it, the execution, was incredibly lazy. Like, they just make the orcs some, kind of racist amalgamation of black people and Mexican people, and the elves are almost kind of Asian. The problem is, I think they're obviously trying to put a message out there, and it's a good message, but it's so heavy-handed they don't land the plane. But also, like, the nerd in me, what I really want to see is, if you're doing that concept, actually look at how these races used to be in, like, a Tolkien D&D type of setting, and then imagine them in the modern day. Like, why do the orcs have to, like, wear, like, stuff that looks like FUBU and just be, like, stereotypical gangsters? Like, wouldn't they be a bit different culturally? So I think they had a great idea, but the execution leaves a lot to be desired.
So they hired a new writer today, which means Max Landis will not be writing the sequel.
So Max Landis wrote this. He is the one who
with the crazy colored hair
and ripped the hell out of how J.J. Abrams wrote Rey. And Max,
yes,
get out of here. Get the hell out of here. He triggered me at the time. Now that I know that you wrote Bright, are you kidding me? That's the laziest writing I've ever seen. Maybe not ever. Definitely not ever. But it's lazy writing.
Man, I want to get back in a time machine. And I want to go back and just create a world in which we get Max Landis and Josh Trank's fantastic Chronicle 2.
Did, like, Max Landis make Chronicle?
He wrote Chronicle.
Damn
Chronicle
it.
Is his baby. And then Josh Boone directed it and kind of shepherded that vision and kept it in check.
Well, damn it, Max. I really like Chronicle.
Right. So, but they hired a new writer from Beauty and the Beast to come in and help David Ayer on the sequel.
That's a jump.
Yeah. So they that
I
they
did not
that.
See the new Beauty and the Beast. I know it didn't.
Yeah, it was the old Beauty and the Beast, just with live people.
Okay, so that's kind of like that's
live people
what
and
I
a
figured.
Few new songs.
New songs. That seems almost sacrilegious.
At least one or two. You know, you can't do the whole thing beat for beat.
That's true.
So other than that, any other thoughts on a Bright 2? Do you need a Bright 2?
No. I wouldn't mind a Bright reboot where you, like I said, try again with that concept and don't just make it some very heavy-handed racial stereotypes. Like, you can still get your message across about race relations without just making orcs analogs for this minority or these people analogs for this minority. Like, that story can still be told.
All right. Now, have you ever seen Sherlock Holmes?
Which one?
Both of them.
Yes. Love Sherlock. I think I would definitely lean towards Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch. But look, I like Downey Jr. and Jude Law as well.
We are finally going to get a Sherlock Holmes 3.
I saw that.
Which might indicate the future of Iron Man.
I didn't love Sherlock Holmes 2, though.
I'm the opposite. I feel like Sherlock Holmes 2 is better than the original. Because I love the fact they did Moriarty. I'm disappointed because they were going to get Brad Pitt to play Moriarty in that movie back then, but they couldn't make it work.
But I just felt it was a little early for Moriarty. As a big Sherlock fan, Moriarty should be
the end game,
hanging out in the background forever.
He should be the end game. But the problem that you have there is that they didn't know how much long. I mean, look, by the time they put this thing out in 2020, it'll be 9 years.
So
they didn't know they were going to have another shot to do this again.
That is
so
true. That's true. But that sort of logic is the same thing that got DC into trouble, thinking we have to accelerate everything. It would be very courageous, but a bold person would maybe hold off and say we're not going to do Moriarty movie 2. But I mean, whatever. I enjoy that franchise.
So are you excited about a Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law, maybe Guy Ritchie if Aladdin doesn't murder his career?
I actually kind of like King Arthur a little bit. Just
fun.
A little bit.
It's a very bad movie. It's a fun 2 a.m. in the morning.
It's like you're kind of like questioning what you're doing with your life, but
you're,
it's free
you're
and
ordering,
it's on TV.
Yeah, you're ordering pluckers. You're kind of high.
Yes, I think that's the perfect way to enjoy Legend of the Sword.
I paid money to see that movie in theaters.
You have a problem with that. You have a problem with that and betting on Stanford. Yeah. Which is coming up.
It is. Memorial Day weekend. $500 on the Stanford Cardinals to win the national championship 2018 for the third consecutive year.
Madman, don't do it. No, I...
David Shaw for LSU football coach 2025.
I could get behind Sherlock. I would like to plug a board game here. Sherlock Consulting Detective is one of the most fun board games I have ever played in my entire life. And what it is you get a case, you get a couple of clues, and then you have to figure it out. And the process of figuring out is just absolutely fascinating. It's incredibly challenging and rewarding. If you can find copies, they're very hard to find. I'd recommend it.
And I highly recommend going and finding a copy of the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego board game because it was fun.
Okay.
So let's move on. So while we're on this tangent of, you know, mismatched sequels and things, Mel Gibson's the director, but The Passion of the Christ 2, Get Risen, is not his next project.
It's not actually called Get Risen, is it?
No.
Okay, that's a working title.
Working title. But he is looking and circling another World War II movie called The Destroyer. Do you really need to see Mel Gibson continue to play in this area of history, or would you like to see him branch out and go make a sequel to What Women Want?
I don't know that I necessarily care what Mel Gibson's doing nowadays. And I don't even mean that as like a huge slight against him, although I know that there's reasons why you could be like angry at Mel Gibson or not care about Mel Gibson. I just mean that I think that, like, I don't know. There's a lot of other exciting filmmakers out there. I'll be pleasantly happy if he makes some good. I love Apocalypto.
I feel like he's getting financing, and if he's getting financing, he should do different things. I get you did Hacksaw Ridge.
I forgot he did Hacksaw Ridge.
You had a thing. You got a claim. People kind of embraced you again. you got more acclaim doing the Daddy's Home and making fun of yourself. I get it, but take that and use it to go do something fun and interesting. Go, you know, go explore another period in British history. You know, if you did so much success with Braveheart, go back and tell another epic about Henry VIII or something.
So what's he doing? His new thing?
The Destroyer. It's another World War II movie. It's another excuse for him to blow things up and tell a history story.
Sometimes, I mean, you look at Tom Hanks. He's filming another World War II movie right now. He's heavily in that World War II museum. Like, sometimes, I guess, if you get bit by the bug...
Saving Mr. Banks is not a movie about World War II, though. He has, like, 35, 40 films that are not about World War II.
Oh, yeah. I guess you're right.
And he never lost financing. He could always do whatever he wanted.
That's true.
He's just now out of director jail, and you're just going to stay in this one little area? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Mm.
So, T-Bob, there was a Power Rangers movie made.
Oh, yeah.
It did not make a whole lot of money, even in Japan. And so you know what the good people at Sabian did this week?
No.
They sold their property.
To?
Hasbro.
So Hasbro bought the Power Rangers back then?
Yes. So they're now in charge of... So Paramount would release any future Power Rangers movies.
So, I mean, it's got to be a couple years, though, before you get into one, right? I mean, before they do one. And then it's got to be a reboot.
It made decent money. It made mid-budget. It made mid-budget money, and it was a mid-budget film. But, I mean, it was not the worst. Look, again, I paid money to go see that movie in the theaters opening night. Which, you know, anybody...
It looked all too sleek to me. It had almost a Michael Bay Transformers type of feel from
anybody,
the previews.
Anybody who knows me knows I was very concerned about that movie. Not in the Ghostbusters way, but I was concerned. Because it's you know, I didn't care as much as I did about Ghostbusters for the simple fact that I got my Power Rangers movie, and I got it in 95 when I was the appropriate age and when the thing was at the height of its importance to me.
It was fun.
Right. Ooze, Ivan Ooze, and the whole thing, and it just worked for me because I was 10, I was 8, I was 9, I was 10. It worked for me. I got that. And if this generation needs to get their moment of that, I'm fine with it. Maybe if it turns some kid on to finding the original Mighty Morphin on Netflix, then that's a great thing.
Yeah.
The movie's not bad.
Really?
The movie is basically Chronicle. If you go back and you watch Chronicle and then you follow it up with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, it's about the same. And the humor is a lot more in Power Rangers. Do they make some questionable choices? Yes. But they layer the mythos in there so well that there is plenty of room to go forward and go forward with those kids, and you tease the Green Ranger at the end.
But they're not now. I mean,
They sold it for, let's see, what was the price tag? What do you think the value of the Power Rangers property is at this particular moment in time?
Oh, I'm so bad at this. $100 million? I have no idea. $50
million. $552 million.
Okay, yeah, I told you I was bad at it.
$500 million.
Jesus Christ. Nice sale. Also, Hasbro has that kind of money? I thought toys were dying. Damn. Good on them.
Yeah, I mean, I am disappointed in this because I was looking forward to seeing if they would do more things. But, I mean, you know, Sabian is the one who pushed to put this out. And, it came off better than anybody expected, but it still didn't make its money back, I don't think. And so, you know, I understand it, but I just am disappointed that they're not going to, not going to do it again.
I guess I'm indifferent because I haven't seen it.
Well, it does open up the possibility for G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Power Rangers crossovers. So...
I would like somebody to, when they do these movies, though, since people are so apt to be nostalgic, why don't they go more chunky, straight 80s aesthetic design with these movies? Like, why does everything have to be so sleek? Like, I know as long as Michael Bay does Transformers, he'll never do that because he's established a definite aesthetic. But if I was ever going to reboot Transformers, it would look like the old toys. If I was going to do Power Rangers, it would look like Mighty Morphin. If I was going to do G.I. Joe, it would seem like it was ripped straight from the toy line. I feel like they're kind of missing a, like, you can do that aesthetic and bring it into the new age and make it work.
Hence the reason why we're not getting a He-Man movie, because they consistently have problems figuring out how to make that work in a modern setting.
Yeah.
Thundercats the same way.
I would like the same concept. I would say the same rules apply to that, but those might be a bit tougher.
And we're also getting an Atomic Blonde, too.
I still never saw one.
Fantastic.
I heard it was a lot of fun.
Fantastic little action film there.
Better than John Wick?
I like John Wick better. Yeah. John Wick 1. John Wick 2, I'm kind of...
Never saw John Wick 2. John Wick 1 is incredible.
All right. So let's spend our remaining time here talking about a film that is called Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah. We got about 10 minutes.
What are your thoughts?
I really like it.
We spent the majority of our time talking about Last Jedi and Star Wars.
I have a problem. I apologize.
You have a problem. I'm the one who saw Rampage in a theater with me and three other people at 10:30 at night.
You have a worse problem. That is true.
I have a financial problem, too, because Stanford's going to win the national championship.
You have multiple problems. It's starting to sound
Stanford's
like...
Stanford's going to win the national championship, and I'm going to take my winnings, and I'm going to finance my book about the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Have you heard about Alabama? You forget about
they could lose in a, they could lose in a semifinal.
Okay.
They could lose in a semifinal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
An undefeated Pac-12
champion.
And
a Marvel movie could come out and not make any money. I mean, it could
happen. We'll test that theory with Ant-Man and the Wasp in July.
That's true. I don't know. I'll probably see it because, like, whatever. You just see every
Marvel
movie
nowadays. You said it was dependent upon word of mouth, so we'll see.
That is true. Like, Ant-Man and Wasp alone is not going to get me there. But you know what? I saw the trailer, and I'm like, all right, this looks it could be kind of fun. But, okay, about Infinity War. Because
me and Nathan did a whole hour on this. So.
I really liked it. To me, as someone who grew up a comic book fan, and some of my favorite thing in comic books are the big epic events. Like one of my favorite singular issues ever of any comic that I've ever read is an old Guy Gardner book where he opens up his restaurant Warriors and all the DC heroes descend upon Warrior for a night and there's a bar fight started by Lobo. But it's just like these absurd situations with these characters that you love from all different parts of the galaxy. I like that kind of stuff. So this appealed to me and this felt the most like reading a comic book of any Marvel movie that I've had in terms of, like, you are jumping all over the galaxy, jumping from crazy setting to crazy setting. All these characters, you're not introducing them because they've already been established. You already know who they are. They're interacting with each other in, you know, kind of funny, lighthearted ways, which is what superheroes do, DC. Just, you know, maybe read your own comics sometimes. It felt like the panels of a comic book in terms of the action, crazy fight. And I think some people may say that it lacks a little depth and like, I could see that, but I don't know if it necessarily needs depth. Like I think that's why a lot of the humor works is because they tend to keep things more popcorn-y and action-y and I guess fun, right? Like is fun the main word that I would use to describe this movie? Maybe save for the ending, which I'm sure devastated children around the world. Like that was my wife's one concern. She's like, wait, if we had older kids right now, what do you tell them at the end of this movie? And then I think, who was I talking to? Was it Nathan? Somebody that I was talking to said that when they were in the theater, after it ended, everybody, like they went to a matinee. So, or no, it was my buddy Steele. He goes to a matinee, like 11:30 a.m. So it's all kids on a Sunday, all kids. He said at the end of the movie, it is deathly silent. These kids are shocked. And then out of nowhere, there's just this traumatic wail from this one little boy who is bawling, crying because all of his favorite superheroes just died. So I almost wish I had kids because I know the comic book rule. Death doesn't mean anything. Like comic book heroes come back. That just is what it is. But it seems like if I was a parent, I almost could have lived vicariously through those kids. So I thought it was, I just liked it, man. I enjoyed every part of it.
We all remember the moment we first saw Empire. We all remember the first time we saw, you know, I Am Your Father. I mean, look, the beautiful thing about that is those kids have no idea that there's a Spider-Man Homecoming 2 scheduled for release in July of 2018. It does impact them and resonate with them in a very important and very meaningful way, which is awesome. You know, I've done now 3 episodes. I've almost done as many episodes about Infinity War as I've done seen the movie. I love the act breaks. I love the black fade to black. I love Thanos as a villain, although I do need
Thanos
some,
is a great villain. That's
I do
a really
need
good
some
point.
More. I do need some more shading. I do need to know why he loves Gamora above all else. I do need to know, you know, what the situation was on Titan that caused them to be overpopulated and why he was banished.
So I like the overpopulation angle because it's a very real thing that we're staring down on our own Earth. But I can't help but feel that if you were in societies this advanced with how crazy the technology is getting, because they're almost suffering from power creep, right? Power creep's a term in gaming where every time you release a new expansion, you would kind of inherently have to make things a bit more powerful, and you kind of nullify everything in the past. Like, at what point do they just come up with a matter creator that solves all resource needs? And if he has the Infinity Gauntlet, instead of killing half the people, can't he just supply everybody with enough resources to live? Like, that's maybe where it can break down if you really want to drill down too much, but I think it works in the movie because they give the example of how Gamora's plan is now thriving and that it worked there.
The children are happy and their bellies are full. And,
Yes. I think that all works. I also think in terms of establishing scenes, having Thanos beat the shit out of the Hulk in hand-to-hand combat was about as badass as you can get. Like, I was immediately like, whoa. Because I don't read the Marvel comic books, so I didn't have a great
frame of reference.
Yes, I didn't know like what to expect out of Thanos, so I was definitely like, oh my God.
Everybody who's listened to this podcast multiple times now knows that I, like, the biggest thing for me was I felt like Rocket and Thor's little journey could have been cut down. I felt like it was a lot like the Canto Bright thing. I get what you're doing.
I feel bad saying this, but, and it's in Game of Thrones too, I don't like Peter Dinklage's English accent.
Yeah.
I don't think it's very good.
But I think we're all...
It's like, so like...
I think we're going to have to go back to the Forge, though.
Hands! No, right. I mean, no, I like that character. I like having a giant dwarf. I like Norse mythology. And the
it's
dwarves
a giant Gimli.
Are the blacksmiths, essentially. Like, I love all of that. By the way, Neil Gaiman's Norse Mythology, a great book for anybody. Yeah. But I love the whole concept. I love how Thor mashes up fantasy and sci-fi. I don't like Peter Dinklage's accent. I like his look. Don't like the accent. That's my only issue.
Had trouble understanding him, yes. But not nearly as much trouble as I've had understanding Tom Hardy and anything he's been in.
Oh, my God. Tom Hardy's Venom voice. What the f... No. Come on. No, you gotta... It's like kind of whiny. I don't even know what Tom Hardy's trying to do. No, point being, it wasn't even understanding for me. I think Dinklage's accent just sounds fake.
Mm-hmm.
Just sounds forced a little bit, but...
I love the movie. I saw it 4 times.
I know. That's the only thing that sucks about having a kid is I cannot get to multiple viewings anymore. I now have to wait for it to come out before I'm going to be able to watch it again.
It's a beautiful film. I enjoyed it. I think the Russos did a fine balancing act. Yes, there are issues, and I've gone over those in the previous podcast. Pepper Potts lives, as far as I know.
How pumped were you when it opens with Tony and Pepper?
I thought
of you immediately.
Yeah, I let out a cheer. I was the only one in the damn theater. Nathan can attest to this. I'm the only one who booed the Venom trailer, and I was the only one who cheered when Pepper Potts showed up. And I'll again make my Kirk Cameron reference. I'm sure he had like a wet dream situation going on there when he saw the rapture actually occur on film. So...
Hey, he saw it in Left Behind movies. We used to watch those in my school back in the day.
And he has 2 Left Behind movies, and Nick Cage has 1 Left Behind movie. So,
oh my God, Nick Cage did a Left Behind movie. I forgot about that.
Yeah, he was a pilot of a plane.
Wow.
I mean, so what do we make of that ending? And how do we undo this? And
well,
I mean, the biggest shock for me was not them killing off Spider-Man. It was Black Panther. That got the biggest reaction in all the screenings that I had.
Yeah, absolutely, because this is a new beloved character. I didn't think they were going to touch Black Panther. I mean, they only left Michonne alive. I apologize for not knowing her real name, but right, Michonne from Walking Dead. Isn't she the only kind of main character from Panther who's still there? Is his sister still there?
We don't know. Just like with Pepper, we don't see them raptured. We do.
I don't know if anybody's too stressed about Pepper.
we do see. Well, I mean, she could have a Stark baby in her.
Yeah, that could be very impactful. Yeah, it could be very impactful.
That's the implication that is raised there that she's with child. She just doesn't tell him.
I was shocked by Black. I was shocked at like the amount of people that went that I was not expecting to go. Pretty much the whole Guardians getting wiped out.
Rocket's the only one left. Yeah.
By the way, Peter, control your temper, bro. Y'all had the gauntlet off of him.
But I mean,
the plan was working.
What was Luke's reaction when Vader told him he's his father?
Yeah. No, you're right. No, I get it. It speaks to he's human, right? We're approaching this from a passive. Mechanical, he must get the Infinity Gauntlet. Love. His love got killed. So, I mean, I get it. It just sucks because they were so close. How do you feel about the fact that Iron Man's technology Where do you go from it from here? Now we're talking
nanotech, where you where it can regenerate.
Yeah, regenerating. Like, there's nothing.
Tissue fixing from.
Yeah, there's nothing left.
The tissue fixing is from Avengers: Age of Ultron, where they just had they've fixed that technology and made it, you know, to where it's portable and usable.
I don't even have a problem with it, though. I guess I get worried about the long term. I'm just
there is no
the long term
effects because there is no long term Iron Man.
Okay,
we're down to the original six. They're either going to have to reforge the gauntlet or they're going to have to go steal the time stone back. And Doctor Strange saw his 14,604 possibilities, and he saw one in which they won. And in order for that one to occur, he realized he had to give up. He realized that he had to give up the time stone in order to bring about that one eventual reality.
I was wondering about that.
And, you know, that's where we're at. We're going to go. We're going to resurrect some people. We're going to leave some people dead. And, you know, that's where we're at. And I think the fate of each and every one of those original six is still up in the air.
So this is the problem, though, is that I don't like when time travel is introduced into stuff.
I don't know that they're going to
paradoxes that are impossible to solve and reconcile.
I don't think they're going to do time travel.
Okay, good.
I think they're going to do BARF.
Do what?
BARF, the technology that Tony Stark used to recreate his memories from at the beginning of Civil War.
Okay.
I think that's the way they're going to do. They're going to use those to recreate scenes to figure out some clues to help them figure out what they need to do to fix the whole thing.
Okay, that's fine. Whatever you need to do to go forward,
right,
without going back,
right. And you notice that
because everybody dead, or are they in another dimension?
They're in the Soul Stone. That's the generally common held belief is that they're all in the Soul Stone. So if you destroy the Soul Stone,
are they sentient in there? Are they like walking around like, oh shit?
I mean, we saw that with the Red Skull, which was a big markout moment for me.
I did not fully. I'm because I am not as versed on my.
I've seen
full
these
Marvel
damn movies too many times.
I did not fully appreciate what was going on in the Red Skull scene. So he's in the Soul Stone in that.
He is. He. The story that he tells is that when he reached out and he touched the Tesseract. At the end of First Avenger, he got whisked away. The Tesseract kicked him out because he was not worthy enough to hold its power, and so the Soul Stone collected him up. And used him for his own purpose because the Soul Stone is sentient and has a mind of its own, and it willed that Red Skull be placed in this predicament where his sole job is to ferry people to this power which he himself wants but can never possess.
Jeez, he was just a simple Nazi,
right?
At one time,
Johann Schmidt was just a simple man who was looking to create, you know, to rule the world. And was deemed unworthy and now is trapped to, you know, forever long for the power he can never have.
It was kind of weird. He almost came off as like a sympathetic, like almost like he was so beyond his old beliefs and old ways.
He had been disavowed of them because he realized he paid a heavy price for reaching out and touching the Tesseract.
Shit. All right, I could talk about this all day, but unfortunately, I have to go.
We all have to go. So that'll about do it for this week's podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
I'm at TBob53.
And when Stanford wins the college football national championship in January, I will be taking my winnings and I will be writing the Mark Sanchez autobiography. So look for that. Look for that coming March 2019.
Oh man! All right, y'all have a
good evening.